Hello, you're listening to So What, a podcast from Canadian Mennonite University. CMU is in Treaty 1 territory, Winnipeg, Manitoba. I am your host, Jonas Cornelson, in Treaty 7, Calgary, Alberta. So What is a show where I dig into public events at CMU, asking how they might apply to my life and yours. Thanks for joining me. A couple of episodes ago, we talked about poetry and tried to make it less scary for those who may have bad high school memories. Today, I'm back to tackle more of your repressed educational fears. It's time to talk about math. Don't worry, there's no numbers or formulas. We're going to get a broader sense of what mathematical thinking is and why it's important for all of us.
It's part of the human condition to be mathematical.
Part of the human condition? You might be thinking, not my human condition. Stay with me. The clip you just heard was from Dr. Francis Hsu, professor of mathematics at Harvey Mudd College in California and former president of the Mathematical Association of America. 2 years ago, in 2023, Dr. Hsu braved the February cold to spend a week at CMU as the scientist in residence, spreading the good news that math is about more than calculation and is a deeply human practice. And I've got to tell you, my personal stake in this conversation is to figure out whether it was a waste of time for me to spend 3 years of high school in pre-calculus classes that I barely remember. So what does it mean to be mathematical and for that to be a part of the human condition? Let's start with a story. As he introduced himself, Dr. Hsu talked about his then 2.5-year-old son, Nate, and said that among the other markers of development, like saying no all the time, something really stood out to him about what Nate was doing.
But, you know, something else that I'm realizing is that he's also starting to be mathematical. Of course, you might be thinking, what are you talking about? He's 2.5 years old. No, he doesn't count yet. I mean, well, he does count a little bit, but, you know, it's not... That's the last thing that I'm thinking about when I see that he's thinking mathematically. What I'm talking about is the following thing that occurred only recently, a few weeks ago. My wife and I, since we got married, have not even bothered to unpack our TV. Okay, and so just recently we were having some people over the house for the first time in years, and we thought, okay, we should unpack the TV, right? So we put it out in the living room, and the little guy was just mesmerized, right? He'd never seen anything so marvelous, right? And the next day, completely out of the blue, he says to us, "Shall we turn on Big Phone?" We were like, what are you talking? Oh, right? His experience of little phone. And of course, the big phone that's now in our living room. And it occurred to me that that is one of Nate's first expressions of mathematical thinking. Because he's seeing a pattern. This thing looks like this thing. This big phone looks like little phone, right? He's learning to abstract. Right, and the abstraction has a purpose, right? It's to try to understand the world and place things in categories, and this is like this.
This story is fascinating for a couple of reasons. One is just broadening our sense of what might count as mathematical thinking for a kid beyond, well, counting. Another is emphasizing that abstraction and pattern recognition are mathematical practices that we learn intuitively and do every day. It's a useful shortcut. If we can relate something we've never seen before to something more familiar, we also get a sense of what it can do. Young Nate saw a big phone and probably figured out pretty quickly that it could play some of his favorite shows, but with the added bonus of the picture being really big. When those of us who grew up with TVs first held a smartphone, some 2-year-old part of our brain did the same thing as Nate's, but in reverse. We figured out that little TV could do roughly the same thing we already liked, watching shows, but with the exciting twist of doing that just about anywhere. That mathematical thinking, abstracting, and comparing helped us quickly recognize that smartphones are awesome and we should spend the rest of our lives staring at them for most of the day. maybe advertising did its bit too in this case. Anyway, if math, here patterns, is so ingrained in how we think and helpful in everyday life, why do so many people dislike learning math? You might think Dr. Sue is unlikely to give much insight into this question since he obviously loves math, but he encountered some obstacles on his journey to get where he is now.
Now, of course, you might look at me, a professional mathematician, and think that my relationship to math has always been solid. Maybe you think I've never struggled in math. But I grew up in a small rural town in South Texas with limited opportunities. Most of my high school peers didn't go to college. And of course, I was fortunate because I had supportive teachers. I had parents who encouraged me in education. And I managed to get admitted to Harvard for my PhD.
Okay, this doesn't sound like a story of struggle so far. The guy just got into Harvard. But listen to what happened when he got there and how it threw his whole relationship with math into question.
But when I got there, I suddenly fell out of place because unlike most of my peers, I didn't come from an Ivy League school. I didn't have a whole slate of graduate courses under my belt when I got there, unlike many of my peers. And I even had one professor, a famous professor, tell me I didn't have what it takes to be a successful mathematician. And of course, I can look at that comment now and think, okay, well, you know, whatever, right? But at the time, that comment really, really hurt, right? It cut to the core of my identity, and suddenly I was forced to ask basic questions, like why am I even doing math, right? Is the whole purpose of math to just get a PhD so that I can be seen as somehow recognized as smart? So that's a question I want all of us to think through tonight. Why is it that we do mathematics or learn mathematics at all? Why do any of us learn mathematics?
Okay, remember, this person later became president of the Mathematical Association of America, and here he was asking why we should learn math at all. That is a question most of us asked long before we got to Harvard. And Dr. Sue talks about this broader context, also bringing in what may be the question I asked most often throughout high school.
Society also is asking what its relationship to mathematics should be like. Is mathematics only a tool to make you, quote, college and career ready? And of course, the perennial question, why study math if you'll never use what you're learning?
Bingo! That is the question you came to this podcast for. I remember asking it a lot as I was grinding my way through pre-calculus. We've been talking about math being all around us, but as a teenager, what I learned in math classes felt far from the things I actually cared about, beyond getting high marks so I could be, quote, college and career ready, as Dr. Sue said. In fact, one of the reasons I was often told to stick with pre-calculus was that it would make my university applications look stronger and I could get more chances to study literally anything else. The everyday value of knowing how to factor a trinomial didn't factor into it. If you're new to the show, the puns are always intended, but that was a bad one. So for Dr. Sue, the problem here is seeing and teaching math as a means to an end, as if doing math is only valuable if it gets you somewhere.
And these questions often arise because math is only ever seen as a means to an end, a tool you're going to use later, rather than a pursuit that serves you well right now. And so when kids ask, when will I ever use this, what they're really asking is, when am I ever going to value this, right? And we begin to equate value with utility unless we can see that you can value something more.
What does it mean to value something, in this case doing math, for more than where it gets you practically? How does pursuing math serve you well right now in the moment you're doing it? I want to reflect a bit on these questions for the rest of our conversation today. The results may not be conclusive, but I think we can find some starting points. To that end, I want to introduce you to one more character who found more solace in math in a difficult situation than I would have thought possible. When I was a high school student grumbling about having to do pre-cal so I could get into CMU, this person was sitting in a Florida jail cell, teaching himself advanced math out of old textbooks. Dr. Sue tells the story this way.
10 years ago now, I received a letter out of the blue by an incarcerated man, an inmate in a federal prison. His name is Christopher. He's been in prison since he was a teenager. He was involved in drugs. He never finished high school. And he was involved in a series of armed robberies at age 19, and he landed in prison with a 32-year sentence. When you think about who does mathematics, would you think of Christopher? And yet he wrote me this letter after 7 years in prison. He said this, "I've always had a proclivity for mathematics, but being in a very early stage of youth and living in some adverse circumstances, I never came to understand the true meaning and benefit of pursuing an education." You see, Chris had studied his way through a series of textbooks, and he was now writing me for help in furthering his mathematics education. So, I ask again, when you think about who does mathematics, would you think of Christopher? And yet, he has inspired me, a professional mathematician, to believe even more fully that math has something to offer everyone.
And then, with what sounds like a bit of a wry smile, Dr. Sue points out what hasn't come up in his exchanges with Christopher.
And yet in a Florida prison, Christopher has never asked, "When will I ever use this?" has he? He's poring over textbooks, learning math in hopeful anticipation of its own intrinsic rewards.
To put it mildly, this is a perspective that may have benefited me and definitely would have benefited my parents when I was younger. We'll hear a little more of Christopher's story at the end, but I want to take some time and hear Dr. Sue on what some of those intrinsic rewards of math are. He says that rather than just doing math problems for their own sake, practicing different kinds of mathematical thinking also gives us the opportunity to develop virtues that help us live well.
What it really should be about is mathematics helping people flourish. Mathematics is for human flourishing. Now, when I say human flourishing, what I'm referring to is a certain wholeness, both of being and of doing. So there's a character aspect, and there's an action that results as that comes about as a result of a changed character. And a basic question taken up by philosophers, or maybe college students here at Canadian Mennonite University, is what does it mean to live life well? How do you achieve human flourishing? Now, one potential answer to that question comes from Aristotle, who says that flourishing comes about through the exercise of virtue. So, I like to think of virtue as a certain excellence of character that leads to excellence of conduct. So it includes more than just moral virtues. I know often when you hear virtue, you think about morality. You think about honesty, ethics, right? Goodness, decency. But let me enlarge that perspective a little bit to include more things like courage, persistence in problem solving, right? Being able to solve problems you've never seen before. These are virtues.
I can almost hear you saying, "Hold on, you said this podcast was about math, but now we're doing philosophy? I promise this is relevant." For Dr. Sue, it's how we get away from seeing math as a means to an end, college and career ready, to something that serves us well in the moment. Because solving math problems can help train us in systematic, logical thinking that also helps us solve other kinds of problems.
To put it another way, think a little bit about some of the challenges that people today need to solve. None of us were trained for some of these problems. We didn't go to college learning skills for these particular problems, right? The invention of the smartphone or any of the new technological gizmos, people 20 years ago in college didn't learn specific skills for those things, but they learned how to think and to reason and to innovate and be creative and to see things out of the box in a new way.
This part resonated with me, partly because I studied communications and media at CMU, and though I graduated less than 20 years ago, some of the actual content I studied already seems charmingly out of date. I had a flip phone my first year. artificial intelligence seemed way more artificial than intelligent. The facts I learned at the time now matter less than the habits of thinking I developed, because those habits now allow me to build on what I know as things change. I don't necessarily feel like I'm doing math when, say, I apply an old theory I learned to new questions, but I can see Dr. Su's general point that some of the core habits in math, thinking logically, looking for patterns, etc., are practices that serve us well in any subject. And lest we get too serious about it, Dr. Su also reminds us of the joy we can experience by noticing patterns. That's another intrinsic reward. He calls this transcendent beauty, seeing the big picture and how things fit together.
And of course, that maybe the deepest form of beauty in mathematics is this transcendent beauty, the beauty of seeing the big picture, right? The fact that sometimes you see patterns here and there, and you begin to generalize, just like my little kid, right? This is a phone, this is a phone. Whoa, his mind was blown, right? Or our minds were blown, right? Now, actually, we don't even call the TV the TV in our house. We call it big phone, because we're so enamored by his description, right? And when you experience beauty from seeing an idea everywhere, it builds in us habits of generalization, right? That's what my little kid was doing. It's the same thing that happens when I'm cooking a stir fry, right? Like, I'm the kind of person who, I want to go into the kitchen, I don't really want to be memorizing recipes, right? I want to be able to just go in and whip up anything I want. And how do you do that? You do that by looking at lots of recipes and looking for general principles. Like, for instance, Chinese stir fries always start with adding chopped garlic and onions first, right? It always ends with the leafy vegetables, putting them in last, otherwise they're going to lose their color, right? And so once you see the principles, you don't need to memorize the recipes, you just know the principles. And those principles are what allow you to innovate, to be creative.
I love that we started with transcendence and ended up back in the kitchen, where if you're like me, you find yourself pretty well every day. What would it add to your experience to see cooking like math, experimenting with changing particular elements in a general pattern? I must admit, a little more mathematical attention to these patterns would probably help me make better stir fries. This sort of creative thinking potential is why Dr. Su believes we need to get people excited about how math shows up in our lives. It's not because we need to be better number crunchers.
There's lots of different ways to be mathematical, to be persistent, to be imaginative, to be able to interpret, to visualize, to abstract, to strategize. These are all different ways of being mathematical. And you can praise your kids or your friends for showing these different ways of being mathematical. Help people see that it's not just computation. You know, this world doesn't need better human calculators. We have calculators for that. But it does need people who can visualize, who can abstract, who can generalize, who can be imaginative. And so you can't really separate the true practice of mathematics from what it means to be human, right? Mathematics is more than just thinking about computation. And part of what we need to do then is to believe that you and everybody in your life can flourish in mathematics.
To bring that point home about everyone flourishing in mathematics, let's return to Dr. Su's friend Christopher and find out where his interest in math led him even while he remained incarcerated.
Now it's several years after his first letter. Chris is doing advanced analysis and topology, right? He's helped something like 50 other inmates get his GEDs, which is his high school equivalency. Right, this is a guy who never finished high school. And he says this about his education. He said, it's a sign of a skilled chess player that he or she can play well out of any position on the board. The person is unaware of his or her options. It's like a player who's in a bad position. Because even if there are fruitful paths available to you that you are not aware of, they may as well not exist. But by climbing our visions of ourselves, education allows us to transcend ourselves and thereby help others to do the same.
Education allows us to transcend ourselves. That's a great quote, and not to be too glib, but maybe that's why I stuck with pre-calculus. If nothing else, I learned a certain kind of perseverance that probably stuck with me. Final answer, not a waste of time, I think. My sister went on to become a math teacher, so at least I can still talk to her about some basic things. I'm curious if Dr. Sue's pitch made you think differently about math. Or if you're not convinced yet, the whole talk is worth listening to. He says it better than me. I'll put a link to the full presentation in the episode notes. Thanks to Dr. Sue for his good work, and thanks to you for sticking with me today. You can reach me with comments or math questions on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sowhatpodcast. My name is Jonas Cornelson. I'll be back in 3 months with another episode. Let's talk again soon.